Lawmakers are still wrangling over a stimulus deal as the clock runs out on supplemental unemployment benefits for millions of Americans. Plus, how conversations about racial justice are expanding. We'll speak with Native American legal advocate Sarah Deer of the Muscogee Creek Nation.
I think we owe a debt of gratitude to Black Lives Matter, which has opened so many doors to talk about difficult historical issues. And of course, that's our story, right? Typical historical issues that have really damaged tribal communities.
And parents turning their backyards and garages into schoolhouses. It's Friday, July 31st. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. A $600 weekly supplement to unemployment benefits expires today. Republicans and Democrats failed to reach an agreement ahead of today's deadline. Meanwhile, Americans are struggling to deal with the economic fallout of the coronavirus. Jason North of Toledo, Ohio, was laid off from his job making aviation parts in June.
When the planes don't fly, obviously we don't have work. If you're out there busting your tail to try to support your family and you get hit with something like this, it's big. I mean, it definitely hurts the working man.
The number of Americans filing for initial weekly unemployment benefits has risen for the past 2 weeks. For more on this story, check out the video on our website at wsj.com/video. Consumer spending rose by 5.6% last month, but there's evidence households have begun pulling back again amid a surge in coronavirus cases. And Americans are putting more money aside. The U.S. savings rate was 19% in June, more than double what it was in February before the pandemic led to lockdowns. Microsoft is in talks to acquire U.S. operations for the Chinese-owned video app TikTok. That's according to people familiar with the matter. The terms of the sale are unknown, but would likely be in the tens of billions of dollars. It would be a win for TikTok. The news came just after President Trump said today that he was considering banning TikTok in the U.S. Federal officials have expressed concerns that China could use the app for espionage. TikTok has said that it does not share data with China and that it wouldn't do so if asked. Authorities say a 17-year-old Florida man was the mastermind behind this month's Twitter hack. Graham Ivan Clark and two other people have been arrested and charged in connection with the incident, in which dozens of high-profile accounts, including those belonging to Joe Biden, Elon Musk, and Apple, were taken over to push a Bitcoin scam. In some cases, the hackers accessed the user's data and direct messages. Hong Kong's leader Carrie Lam announced she'll be postponing legislative elections in the territory for a year, citing a recent surge in coronavirus cases. Prominent pro-Beijing politicians had been calling for a delay, but pro-democracy groups in Hong Kong say it's part of a continued political crackdown by China. Relations between Hong Kong and China have become increasingly tense. Beijing imposed a sweeping national security law on the city just a month ago, limiting the territory's autonomy. And the U.S. government has agreed to pay up to $2.1 billion to drug makers Sanofi and GlaxoSmithKline for 100 million doses of the vaccine they're currently developing for the coronavirus. Our biotech reporter Joseph Walker says it's one of many deals the government has made as part of Operation Warp Speed, whose goal is to secure 300 million vaccine doses for the U.S. by January.
They've been signing contracts with a number of the leading vaccine developers to A, help fund the clinical trials, and then also in exchange get guaranteed hundreds of millions of doses if those vaccines work out in clinical trials. So more than $8 billion invested right now, sort of acting as a venture capitalist almost, because, you know, certainly it's probably unlikely that all of those deals will pay off in the end, but they're hoping that at least a couple of them will.
Pfizer and its partner BioNTech, as well as Novavax, are among the companies the government has made deals with. Coming up after the break, we speak to Native American legal advocate Sarah Deer about how a recent Supreme Court case could ripple beyond Oklahoma and the impact of the coronavirus on Native communities. One of the big rulings from this year's Supreme Court term was McGirt versus Oklahoma. The 5-4 decision declared a swath of the state near Tulsa to be part of the Muscogee Creek Nation's reservation, enforcing 19th century treaties the U.S. made with the Creek. That landmark recognition of Native American rights could lead to nearly half of the state being classified as Indian country, but it also wrestled with questions of sovereignty on Native American reservations. This is an issue that Native American legal advocate Sarah Deer, who's a citizen of the Muscogee Creek Nation, has been working on for many years. We had a chance to speak with her following the decision. Sarah, I'd love to hear your reflections on this decision, as well as the broader impact this could have for all Native Americans.
Well, winning a treaty case in the Supreme Court in 2020 is not what anybody was expecting. This case came about in a very interesting and unexpected way as a result of some folks who were prosecuted by Oklahoma. And so they were the champions for tribal sovereignty. It's a very odd circumstance where you have perpetrators of crime on the one hand and celebrating their victory because it means so much for Indian country.
So, Sarah, you've worked on tribal law and issues of sovereignty for much of your career. Why is this such a pivotal issue for you and for Native Americans?
The Supreme Court does not have a great track record with tribal issues. And so when cases move their way through the federal system, you know, from the district to the circuit to the Supreme Court, we feel like we're always playing, you know, defense. Like we're really, you know, struggling to get the issues of tribal governments, you know, to be treated seriously. And so I think this victory is not just important for Native people from my tribe or even Native people from Oklahoma, but to see a treaty be held up as the law of the land, as the Constitution requires, is a tremendous lift for people all over the United States who care about tribal issues.
Tell us some more about the work ahead regarding this issue.
Sure. Well, one of the restrictions that still remains on our jurisdiction over crimes is that we can't prosecute non-Indians unless it's a domestic violence case. So that means that if a non-Native person, you know, commits a homicide or a sexual abuse case against a child, if they do those things and it's on the reservation, we have no power over them in terms of the criminal justice system. So one of my long-term agenda items is to change that, to just restore to tribes, like any government can prosecute anybody who comes into our community and commits an act of violence. You know, I'm currently sitting in Kansas right now. If I went to Missouri and committed a crime, you know, they could prosecute me. So why shouldn't it be the same for tribes?
Sarah, to shift gears slightly, another big topic in the news, of course, is the impact of the coronavirus across the world. And we know that it has also hit Native Americans particularly hard. Why is that? And what kind of attention would you like to see around this issue?
I'm so glad you asked that. I think the primary issue that we're seeing, of course, is the health disparities that already exist, right? So we've been talking about how folks have a higher rate of vulnerabilities like diabetes or lung disease and those kinds of things. And so tribal nations suffer from those disparities as well. I think it also harkens back, right, to smallpox in a way, because tribal nations, you know, almost disappeared as a result of widespread disease starting in the 1700s and even continuing into the Spanish flu era in the early part of the 20th century, you know, very high death rates. And so there's a sense that there's a sense of urgency about viruses that may not exist in other communities because we know we're barely here in the aftermath of smallpox. And so we do take these things very seriously. I also think that tribal communities tend to be very small and sort of close. And so that also puts our nation at risk. You know, like in some of our tribal cultures, you don't not go see grandma, like culturally, like you go see grandma, right? And so that's been, I think, a cultural barrier in some of our communities towards, you know, the necessity of isolation. That's been a hard cultural thing to deal with for a lot of Native people.
We're also at a time where we're seeing a movement across the nation focusing on civil rights and reforming the justice system. It seems like we're also seeing a lot more intersectionality on issues that overlap for multiple groups here. Do you feel that Native Americans are being heard in these broader conversations and this broader push for equality?
I do. I think that, you know, the Black Lives Matter has really opened doors for many different issues. Although the centering of Black bodies and police brutality is certainly at the core, the discussions and the protests that we're having are really opening up a lot of conversations. And those are conversations that Native people, you know, have wanted to have on a national level and wanted to be able to take to a larger audience. And I think we owe a debt of gratitude to Black Lives Matter, which has opened so many doors to talk about difficult historical issues. And of course, that's our story, right? Typical historical issues that have really damaged tribal communities. And so that opportunity we've really benefited, I think, from other forms of activism. And I feel very grateful for the work that they have done.
I've been speaking with Sarah Deer. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
We have a more in-depth interview with Sarah Deer about her career and advocacy for Native communities on our Secrets of Wealthy Women podcast this week. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, we've been talking about how schools are trying to prepare for the fall, either with social distanced reopenings or remote learning programs. But the prospect of more of that has some parents taking matters into their own hands. They're rallying with neighbors and their kids to create pandemic pods in their yards or garages. Our Kirsten Grind says parents are getting pretty creative.
One family is actually repurposing a geodesic dome made of parachute that they used for the Burning Man Art Festival in Nevada, and they've set it up in their yard to use as a dome school for their kindergartners and his classmates. So I thought that was really original, and we've seen parents set up schools on a side street, in their basements, just all kinds of things.
So clearly the process of going back to school is complicated, and there are still a lot of unknowns heading into the fall. We'd like to hear how you're dealing with it. If you have questions about schools and colleges reopening, or your own anecdotes, you can leave us a voicemail. The number is 315-992-8298. The number's also in our show description. We'll bring on our reporters and experts to try to help you get answers. And that's what's news for this Friday afternoon. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Mark Stewart. The show was produced this week with help from Paolo Bossanin, Mark Garrison, Kateri Yoakum, Amanda Llewellyn, Charlie Turner, Sam Westren, and J.R. Whalen. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.